laundry, dead or alive. Investigators call in a cadaver dog to search for his remains in that Florida swamp. News Nation's Brian Enten is staked out at the laundry home right now, and he'll be taking your questions live on the air tonight on Banfield. And now we know why Alex Murdoch wasn't sporting a gaping wound when we saw him in court a mere 12 days after he was supposedly shot in the head. The man accused of shooting him says if he'd actually done the deed, Murdoch would be dead. But don't worry, we're going to get another look at Alex Murdoch soon in another hearing because he is under arrest again. Welcome to Banfield. We've got some breaking news to report tonight. Former President Bill Clinton is in a hospital in California. His spokesman is releasing information saying that the former president is being treated for what they call a non-COVID related infection. Former president was admitted to the University of California Irvine Medical Center on Tuesday evening. He is reportedly, and this is their words, on the mend, in good spirits, and is incredibly thankful to the doctors, nurses, and staff providing him with excellent care. The doctors caring for President Clinton say that he was given an IV of antibiotics and fluids and that he remains in the hospital just so that they can continue the monitoring, as you see there. Again, former President Clinton in the hospital since Tuesday. So it's been kept a secret for 2 days. He went Tuesday evening for a non-COVID-related infection. We're going to obviously keep an eye on the former president to see how he's doing, and certainly, as we would for any former president, we wish him well. Now to our top other story. Is the hunt for Brian Laundrie about to reach a grisly and maybe ultimately unsatisfying conclusion? Or are we headed for a reset in the investigation of epic proportions? That's what we're all waiting to hear tonight. Because earlier today, investigators called in a cadaver dog to help search for Brian Laundrie in the Carlton Nature Reserve. And there's a big difference between a tracking dog and a cadaver dog. A cadaver dog is specially trained to detect the scent of human death. And we're learning it is not the first time that K9 Diesel has had a visit to that swamp looking for Laundrie's remains. A law enforcement source tells me tonight that a few weeks ago, Diesel and his handler, investigator Sue Miller, were called out to the swamp along with a bloodhound from the Pasco Sheriff's Detachment, as well as a dual-purpose tracking dog. The dual-purpose dog searches for a fresh, live scent, while the cadaver dog searches for death. Searchers have spent well over $1 million looking for Laundrie in that swamp since the day his parents said that he went off hiking and then, lo and behold, just never came home. So will this single cadaver dog be able to do what dozens and dozens of very skillfully trained law enforcement officers with the best tracking equipment available have thus far been unable to do? Or will this be the final red flag that Brian Laundrie was never in that swamp to begin with? I'm joined by News Nation's Brian Enten, who is staked out at the Laundrie family home. That is quite a development that a cadaver dog, one single cadaver dog, comes back, Brian, to that swamp because the FBI said to us, we're done. We're done unless we get some specific intelligence. And when I hear cadaver dog paired with specific intelligence, my spidey senses are tingling. Do you know anything about this?
So, well, first of all, Ashley, it's been very, very, very quiet at the swamp, at the reserve for the last several days. So we were sort of under the assumption that they were moving on from the swamp. We were on our way out here to the house when I got a call early this morning that there was activity at the swamp on the Venice, Florida side. Totally didn't expect it. Turns out there were about a dozen law enforcement cars that showed up at the swamp bright and early this morning. Among them, you mentioned it, the Pasco County Sheriff's Office Cadaver Dog Unit. They were there. They were called in. There was a helicopter up that was able to get aerials, and it appeared they were focusing on one area in particular. We got no update. It does not appear that they found anything, and we don't know exactly why today they went back out there with the cadaver dog.
So is the, I mean, I suppose if you were looking for clues, and it's hard when you're looking at the video, right? They don't let us get close to them. So I'm very impressed that WFLA was able to get these shots. I remember them saying they are restricting the airspace. I mean, they're so buttoned up on this investigation that they were restricting the airspace. But I do see that there are multiple cages in those pickup trucks. And I know that my source from Pasco said that canine, Diesel, and Sue Miller, his handler, the forensics investigator, they'd been out there a couple weeks ago with a number of other dogs, a bloodhound and a dual purpose. Did you get any evidence today, Brian, that there were multiple dogs out there, whether it was eyes on or even ears on?
So we only saw the one dog out there. There could have been others. You have to remember, anytime we talk about the reserve, it's 24,000 acres, and there's two different sides. There's the Venice side and then the Northport side, and it's basically impossible for us to know exactly what's going on from the ground. Again, thank goodness for that WFLA chopper. They've got an unbelievable reporter. We went up with them once over the reserve. So they're the ones who are able to really see what's going on there. We only saw the one dog, but we sort of got the same information that you did, that this is not the first time that they've called the cadaver dog in. And I was told, look, you know, sort of don't overplay this because we've done this before. This is just part of our ongoing search. But it's hard to understand because it's been so quiet for the last 4 or 5 days out there. And now all of a sudden today, all this activity again.
So I'm also trying to determine how many law enforcement detachments might be among those vehicles. I also noticed that some of them are very artfully unmarked. So sometimes it's a little tricky. I know that FBI travels a lot in unmarked. I can see sheriff. I mean, clearly Pasco County Sheriff. I'm just wondering how many other detachments, how many other types of law enforcement. Hard to tell from those uniforms. But, you know, this is run by the FBI, and they are the ones who call in the various divisions like Pasco. Is Northport still a part of it?
Northport is still a part of it, and there's two things I want to tell you. First of all, we were shown some video that we were not allowed to download of police deep inside the reserve, and it is an awful, awful place to search. We've told you before about the snakes and alligators, but they're literally like in water above their knees, almost to their waist in some areas searching. So it's difficult for law enforcement out there. The other thing I wanted to tell you is, again, that we just weren't expecting this today. We didn't know that this was going to happen at the reserve, and I think there's something that we don't know that they know that brought them back there.
So I will say that the law enforcement source I spoke with said that what was very difficult but not impossible, and this surprised me, was that when those cadaver dogs, bloodhounds, and dual-purpose trackers were out there, those animals, they were in waist-deep water. That is difficult. If you think about a dog in waist-deep water, in alligator-infested, first of all, that made me angry, given the fact that the dogs' lives were put at such incredible risk, but that's their job. They have to. But that they can still do their job. They can still take a scent off the top of the water. And it made me wonder, Brian, if Diesel and Susan Miller, the forensic investigator, went back there because the water had receded so they could recheck their work.
That is just what I was about to explain to you, is that this swamp has been so flooded for the last month because there's been so much rain in this part of Florida, and it has finally been receding over the last week. And when I interviewed Northport Police last Friday, they explained that to me, that they are now able to get to parts of this swamp that they were not able to get to 2-3 weeks ago. As the water goes down, is it possible that they find something of Brian Laundrie's or even human remains out there that these dogs can track? That seems to be what they're focusing on right now.
Yeah, let me tell you, I was so fascinated doing a deep dive into the various skills of these dogs. You know, the cadaver dog, that dog is trained to sniff out death. That's human decomp. That is what their job is. The dual purpose, that tracker is meant to sniff out fresh scent, which could mean a hiker who just went by or Brian Laundrie just went by. Fresh human scent. And then the bloodhound is specifically purposed to get a piece of, an article of clothing with the scent of the target. And that's what the bloodhound tracks. They would track Brian Laundrie, period. No one else, no other hiker, no other fresh scent, just Brian Laundrie. But it's interesting to have all three of those kinds of skill sets out there. And then you can see, again, in that picture, multiple cages. But I do know that it was just the one cadaver dog. It's a very specially trained animal. There are not that many of them, in the country. So it's fascinating that they asked Pasco to come back. Brian, I have this question for you. And it is a switch in gears from this news in the swamp today. And it comes right back to where you're standing. It's on the lawn. We remember the other night when neighbors came over and they started pounding in a dual post sign, which was blank on the back, where, like, you know, that would face your back, but was very clear to the windows of the laundry home that they were looking out. And it was a sign about, it was a sign about Gabby saying, "We used to live here." You know, I'm paraphrasing, but it was very clear that they wanted to send a message, these neighbors, to the laundries. And then we saw the laundries pick it up and take it away. You've spotted something else happening just in the last few hours. Tell me about it.
Yeah, it was quiet out here all day. The laundries haven't been out. And then all of a sudden there was a bit of commotion. There was a different group of people, possibly the same group as last time. We weren't able to get a good look at them, that showed up here and put in a new sign. Take a look.
Can you guys tell us what you just put there?
You can look at it. Remember me, Gabby sign.
Yeah, so Fox News digital reporter catching that. And that's what's on the opposite side, Brian. Like, I'm looking at the clear picture now. You're standing right there. I don't know. Do your lights have it lit up as well, so we can take a look at what it looks like live with some perspective?
Yeah, let's go walk down. It was actually put in right by this little memorial right on the side of the yard in a different spot from last time. But you can see it's basically a cutout of Gabby Petito at the top here. It says, "Remember me." It's pointed towards the laundry home. And if you come around the back, you can kind of see the way this thing is set up. It's basically cardboard. But as you saw the women there, they put this wooden stake into the ground, hoping to sort of keep it there and that no one will move it, obviously taking into account what happened last time someone put a sign similar to this one when Chris and Roberta Laundrie came out basically in the middle of the night and took it down.
Well, I'm sure that they wanted that to withstand rain and wind if they made that big of an effort. I still can't imagine having to get that all printed up and carved into shape. And clearly these neighbors are mad. These protesters are mad. One other thing I want to talk about with you, Brian, is that there's a bit of a war of words going on with the laundry attorney, Steve Bertolino, and two very high-profile people who have entered into this case, for their own purposes. John Walsh aired a special on the Gabby Petito case, and Dog the Bounty Hunter has been involved as well. And Steve Bertolino had some really, really harsh words for both of these men. Let me read, if I can, what he said. And again, this is Steve Bertolino's words. "Dusty relics like that dog and John Walsh need a tragic situation like this so they can clear the cobwebs off their names and give their publicity-hungry egos some food." Well, obviously, we were going to check in with John Walsh and Dog the Bounty Hunter to see if they had a reaction to that. John Walsh declined to respond to that. But Dog the Bounty Hunter did not decline, and he had a statement for Mr. Bertolino, and this is what it said. This is Dog the Bounty Hunter. "It is ironic that Mr. Bertolino would criticize the people trying to find Brian Laundrie, unless perhaps he doesn't want him to be found." So now it's sort of devolved into that. In the meantime, the big news also today that's not in Florida, but again, makes you heartsick, is that Joe Petito traveled to Wyoming, Brian.
Yeah, that's right, Ashley. Joe Petito, the Petitos, went to Wyoming to finally get Gabby's remains. She was cremated. We're told that they met with law enforcement also, and that they will now be bringing her home. So obviously, just, a very, very sad moment for the Petito family. But when you brought up Mr. Bertolino, there was something I thought of that I wanted to share with you, because you never really know what you're going to get from Mr. Bertolino. Obviously, he gave that very fiery statement today in regard to John Walsh and Dog the Bounty Hunter. We were thinking today, because there's been so much speculation lately about, gosh, people asking, could Mr. Bertolino know where Brian is? Could he be hiding Brian? So we just decided to text him today and asked, do you personally know where Brian Laundry is? And Mr. Bertolino responded, no, I do not. And then we went on to ask him, well, through attorney-client privilege, you know, we know that that allows a lot. That allows a lot. That's why we wanted to be straightforward and ask you this question. I said, I'm sure you'd tell me if you knew. And he said, no, I wouldn't, but I don't.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, A, for clarity and straightforwardness, I suppose. You know, Brian, I could go on and on with questions, but I'm not the only one who has questions for you. Our audience has been peppering us with questions for you. So can you stay and answer some questions from our viewers and from your Twitter followers? They're just piling in live. I'm looking at them, and I can't get them all in, but I'm going to get in as many as I can if you have the time. So you can stay with us for a little bit later.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be here outside the house. Yep.
Excellent. Okay, so Brian is going to stick with us, and I'm going to have those questions for you. If you want to send us some of the questions as well, I encourage you to send them right now to our Twitter handles, at Ashley Banfield, TV Ashley. Actually, do the TV Ashley one, at TV Ashley. We'll watch that one coming in live. And then also at Brian Enten. So we're going to get to as many as I can, as I mentioned before. But before that, there's other breaking news that we are covering tonight. Alex Murdoch. The break from the media glare is officially over, and a brand new mugshot. Take a look. Tonight, he is facing a brand new slate of criminal charges, but the case of the undetectable head wound, well, that might now be solved.
If I shot him, didn't we did? He's alive.
Cousin Eddie speaking volumes, in fact. And also, Murdoch's lawyer speaking volumes. And honestly, may not be doing his client a whole lot of favors, because we found some stuff that doesn't match up with what he just said. It's still ahead. Welcome back. I don't know if you could feel it, but I started to feel it today when I thought back. Been almost a month, a full month, since Alex Murdoch last dominated the headlines. Remember that? But tonight, he's back. Murdoch's already epic spiral from the heights of prestige and power has certainly picked up a lot of speed today with his arrest again, this time for allegedly swindling the grieving sons of the longtime Murdoch family housekeeper after she met an untimely death back in 2019. Look at all those headlines. Yikes. And a brand new mugshot. Murdoch was arrested at his out-of-state drug rehab. Apparently, he finishes up rehab and they slap the cuffs on him, which we now know, the out-of-state one, it was in Orlando, Florida. I did not expect that. Now he's due back in South Carolina as soon as tomorrow, but there's that whole messy thing about extradition from state to state. You may already know this, but Murdoch's facing criminal charges arising from something else, too. His bungled alleged scheme to get himself killed for $10 million in insurance money. And tonight, his alleged co-conspirator is grabbing a few headlines himself. It's Curtis Smith, a.k.a. Cousin Eddie. He tells NBC that he never shot anybody. And the pictures actually don't prove him wrong. Take a look. Every angle we could get of Alex Murdoch. I don't see any major gunshot wounds there. This is only a week and a bit after apparently this blood-curdling injury that life-flighted him away. Okay. We'll talk about that in a second. But I'm joined now by South Carolina lawyer Eric Bland, whose legwork on behalf of the sons of Gloria Satterfield may well have helped bring about the newest legal migraine for Alex Murdoch. Eric, it's good to have you back on the show again. So is it true? Do you think the work that you did to sue for the money that Gloria Satterfield was rightly owed actually ended up leading to criminal charges for Alex?
Good evening, Ashley. Yes, I think the work that my partner Ronnie Richter and I did helped SLED bring these charges with the Attorney General's office against Alex Murdoch for misappropriation and obtaining money under false pretenses. I was able to get evidence and provide it to law enforcement through subpoenas and third parties, that because SLED may have been focused on the other criminal investigations that were ongoing, did not focus on this. And you remember, I've been on your show at least four or five times, and I've told you from the start that I believe that the Gloria Satterfield matter would be at the epicenter of Alex Murdoch. And I told you it's the hub and everything else is the spoke. And I do believe that this is the beginning of the downfall of Alex Murdoch. I think that when there's the bond hearing, and it's going to be on Monday or Tuesday, not tomorrow, I do believe that we're going to see totally different. Yeah, we're going to see a totally different outcome.
So can I ask you this, Eric? You just said bond hearing, which would mean, you know, the extradition. I'm assuming that he's not going to fight that. That would just be, you know, nuts. But he's got to go from the Orange County jail in Orlando, Florida, back home to face this business. Bond hearing, say, on Tuesday. But I'm still curious about what he's facing. I mean, it's two counts of obtaining property under false pretenses. They're felonies. Is it a 10-year max or is it a 10-year each? Are they combined? Could he be facing 20? What's the exposure here?
It could be 20. And I do believe there's going to be additional charges. As you know, Ashley, he misappropriated three checks totaling $3.59 million. So he's only been charged with two of those of obtaining false pretenses. So there is a third one that will be coming, I believe. And also the federal government is looking into this, and I wouldn't be surprised real soon if we see money laundering, bank fraud, wire fraud, failure to file income tax, criminal penalties, and a whole source of other federal crimes.
Oh, those are ugly because, you know, if I'm doing really fast mental math, which is never a good idea, that's at least 20 years. And in the federal system, you don't get a whole chunk off for good behavior. You serve the majority. And if they charge him, this is like a 99% chance that the feds get it right, that they get the conviction. It's so incredibly high. So if he sees those charges coming, it's like, you know, ugh, game over. One question for you really quickly. I got like 30 seconds. Go ahead. Real quick. Go ahead.
I think you're going to see Monday, we have a new judge that is going to preside over the bond hearing, Clifton Newman, who is a very seasoned, longtime South Carolina judge who is a no-nonsense judge. I think it's going to be completely different than the magistrate court hearing that you saw when the charges were brought with Cousin Eddie.
Okay, got a couple seconds left, but I have to get you on the record on this one. There was no autopsy performed on your client's mom, Gloria Satterfield. But now there's a lot of ugly, ugly allegations out there. And I'm wondering if you think personally that there might be a body exhumed in this case and a criminal investigation into the potential aspect of her death, meaning she didn't trip and fall. There might have been something else. What do you think?
Well, at this time, we still believe that she died an accidental death. It certainly wasn't a natural death. You don't die a natural death falling downstairs. So it wouldn't surprise me that SLED, who has already told the public that they're doing a criminal investigation into her death, would make a request to exhume her body. We fully expect that that's going to be asked of the family sometime down the road. But, you know, obviously they are pretty busy right now with the existing crimes that he's charged with, as well as bringing him back to South Carolina so he could face justice. I think you're going to find the Bakke hearing very interesting.
That manner of death, right? That sneaky manner of death, natural. That sounded crazy to a lot of us, but hey, you know, things can happen. Hey, Eric Bland, I hope you're going to come back. The news keeps happening in your neck of the woods, so we'd love to have you back. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
But we're not done with the Murdochs yet. Always. You're always welcome. We're not done with the Murdochs yet because after the break, Cousin Eddie decided to tell all. And Murdoch's own attorney, well, he just went ahead and let slip some brand new facts. But the problem is we went back after the old facts to just, you know, parse through them like we do. And they don't square. They don't square at all. In fact, wait till you hear the difference. He's been called a hitman. He's been called a drug dealer, and both of them in connection with Alex Murdoch. But today, Curtis Edward Smith, also called Cousin Eddie, said that he is neither of those two nasty things. I want to play for you some jaw-dropping sound, not just from Eddie, but also from Murdoch's own attorney, who incidentally might just have gotten Cousin Eddie off the hook for a couple of the charges that Eddie is facing, which, you know, is a little bit Weird. Joining me to break it all down is Steve Helling, People Magazine senior writer, who joins us from Orlando, which incidentally, Steve, who knew, but it happens to be where Alex Murdoch was booked and locked up just hours ago. I bet you didn't know you were going to be in the epicenter of the story. Before we do anything, I just want to play for our audience the moment on the Today Show where Cousin Eddie was like, I did not do this shooting. I'm not part of this. Take a look.
Okay.
I didn't shoot him.
Are you innocent of everything?
I'm innocent. Yeah. If I'd have shot him, he'd be dead. He's alive. He's standing like this. He said, you going to shoot me? I said, no. He said, well, you just got to do it. And he made his move like this, you know. And I just grabbed his arm.
You took the gun.
I shoved it behind him, between me and him. And it went off.
The gun went off. Did it hit him? Did the bullet hit him?
No.
So that story.
There's no blood on me. There's no blood on him.
He didn't get shot in the head.
No. We bounced off his car and kind of made a move to get the gun and he hit the dirt, you know. And
what percent are you positive that he didn't get shot? If you could put a percentage on it.
1,000.
There's no, he didn't get shot.
Steve Helling, 1,000% sure he didn't get shot. At least while Cousin Eddie was there. And if I'd have shot him, he'd be dead. That stood out to me. But I think, Steve, while you are explaining this phenomenon to me, I want to show our audience pictures of that appearance that Alex Murdoch made in court from every angle. And please tell me if you saw any head wounds during that appearance in court, Steve.
I mean, the pictures speak for themselves. You know, after we'd heard that he'd gotten shot, before we saw him in court, we were expecting, you know, bandages. We were expecting a lot more, maybe a shaved head, you know, and none of that really happened. And it's really made you stop and wonder what's really true, what's not true. You can never tell in this case.
Yeah, especially since his lawyer said, I mean, literally said he had a fractured skull. There was an entry wound, an exit wound, profuse bleeding all over the place. But I didn't even see a Band-Aid at that appearance. And this appearance, it's exactly 12 days after this life flight bloody mess. Okay, I'm going to switch gears a little, and I'm going to play a piece of an interview, which I know, Steve Helling, I know how your mind works. You grabbed the details out of this, and you know, like I know, Jim Griffin said some things that do not square with other stuff he said before. So first, the interview that he gave this week, and then when I come back with you, we're going to talk about the stuff he said last week. So here's the most recent. Take a look.
We have requested all of the medical records. We've not received them yet, but the records that I do have are from the air ambulance transport, and they clearly document. During this meeting, he explained to me what had happened. He explained to me that he had an addiction. He explained to me how serious his addiction was. He explained to me that he had already made arrangements to go to rehab. He then had told me what he had planned to do that day. He was going to go tell other people that he was real close with what he had what had happened and what he was going to do. And in that conversation with him, and I have had clients at the end of their rope before. I've been doing this over 30 years. I talked with him, and I was concerned. You know, was this something that would cause him to try to kill himself? And I had that conversation with him, and I felt reasonably confident after I left him that he was not in that frame of mind. And I don't think he was in that frame of mind at that point in time.
Okay, Steve, I know this is not lost on you. He says he met with his client the morning of this incident and that his client kind of went over his plan for the day, which we now know was this ridiculously, well, alleged scam to shoot himself to get the insurance money. Are you alarmed by this, that he made this admission?
Yeah, I'm alarmed. Alarmed might not even be the right word. Flabbergasted is probably the word. You know, why would you say all this? Why would you be giving all this information away in an interview? And then on top of it all, it doesn't make any sense to me. So you talked to him about his day. You said that he didn't seem suicidal. He didn't seem like he was going to do anything bad. And then a few hours later, this whole thing happens. nothing adds up to me in this story. No. Nothing whatsoever.
I'm just going to read out a couple things real quick here. This is what Griffin said back in the day. These are the accounts he gave back in the day. Now, when you hear this, keep in mind that Jim Griffin had met with his client that morning and knew that he had planned something crazy. So here we go. Murdoch was driving to Charleston when he noticed an indicator light. He had a low tire on his car, which was his late wife's Mercedes-Benz, according to Griffin. He pulled over, got out of his car when a truck passed by. The pickup truck turned around at St. John's Baptist Church and drove back to Murdoch. The driver of the truck rolled his window down and came to a stop and asked if he had car trouble, Griffin said. Murdoch said he didn't know if he could change the tire, nor whether he had the right equipment to do so. And then Murdoch was shot, according to his lawyer. Jim Griffin goes on back in the day to say this. The driver was male and driving a blue pickup truck. Griffin said there was no gun found on the side of the road or in Murdoch's car or in the area by sled. He also said a sled agent who was on the scene told him that the sidewall of Murdoch's tire was sliced. The sled agent discussed how the agency is testing the blood in Murdoch's car, which spilled from his wound while he was retrieving his phone to call 911 after the shooting. I mean, it just goes on and on. This tale that Jim Griffin told on the day that he knew all along. What this to me is not over, but we have to fit in a break, Steve Helling. So when we come back after the break, Jim Griffin said something else about Cousin Eddie, and it might have just let Cousin Eddie off the hook completely. Yeah. Play that. Talk to you in a moment.
Sled has said from the get-go that Alec was a person of interest. Sled said the next morning, which is still mind-boggling to us, that the public need not be worried about, you know, their safety. Which, you know, I've talked to people who heard that, and first the thoughts were, it must have been a murder-suicide. We know that wasn't the case. Then the second thought is, it must be, you know, some domestic related. And when you look at, you know, domestic violence, who you look at? You look at the husband or father.
Wow. Steve Helling, senior writer with People Magazine. Once again, I can just see you saying, like, wow, he's saying he's a person of interest. It had only ever been thought before, but nobody ever actually said it. It's significant, isn't it, if you're officially a person of interest in a murder, a double murder?
100%. And to have your own lawyer say publicly that you're a person of interest is really bad news for you. And the funny thing is that nobody expected that that he would say this out loud. And so, you know, when I heard it, I thought, huh, because nobody has confirmed this to us. We've been asking everybody, is he a person of interest? And nobody would give us the definitive yes. And it was Alec Murdoch's own lawyer who did.
Yeah, and then he did something else, which was astounding. And I think Cousin Eddie might be popping the champagne cork on this one. All along, Eddie has been part of this, charged in a conspiracy to bilk, you know, Alex's insurance, you know, company for $10 million in life insurance by coming and, you know, shooting him in the head. And Eddie has said, I didn't do this. And now Jim Griffin, Alex Murdoch's lawyer, well, this is what he said. Take a look.
My understanding is that this guy was unaware of why Alec had called him out there, and that Alec made the request and he obliged.
Steve, does that tell you that Eddie's telling the truth?
I mean, unaware of why he was being asked out there is not what we thought the answer was going to be. And it's certainly, I don't understand what Jim Griffin's doing, because everything he says is making things worse for his own client and better for everybody else. And I don't understand why he would be doing that. But, you know, obviously I'm here for it. It's fascinating.
Well, I smell another cover on People because you seem to have them weekly. Steve Helling, thank you for being on. It's good to see
you
again. Thanks. Still ahead tonight, Brian Enten is going to come back. You sent your question in. He's got your answer. Right next. Welcome back to our special coverage of the manhunt for Brian Laundry. We're still waiting to hear news from that swamp search today. The investigators calling out a cadaver dog. all the way to the Carlton Reserve from Pasco County. K9 Diesel and his handler, investigator Sue Miller, she's a forensic investigator. They have been here before, just a few weeks ago, and they had to battle waist-deep water. Don't forget alligator-infested waters. That makes me mad. All of that in an effort to cover all the bases, a source tells me tonight. But there is no word on why today. Why yet again? The need for a cadaver dog. Law enforcement is also not saying if they now think that Brian might actually be dead. Joined by News Nation's Brian Enten, who is outside the Laundry family home. He's ready to answer your questions. And if you haven't submitted them yet, you still have time. So just send them on Twitter to TV Ashley, L-E-I-G-H. And then also at Brian Enten. And we're going to try and get a lot of questions. Okay, so Brian, the first one comes from Jill on Twitter. And she's got a good one. She asks, are there any cameras leading into the preserve or out? It might show if his parents lied.
Yeah, that's a good question. Right outside the reserve, it's not like there's any shopping centers or a mall or any businesses like that. There are some small neighborhoods. We've checked around, but no surveillance cameras from what we can see.
Okay, and then Cooper on Twitter asks this. If they do find Brian dead, can they still look into the involvement of the parents?
Absolutely. I would assume so. You might know better than me, Ashley, with this one, but I would assume so if they can prove that the parents somehow hid Brian at one point or helped him get away. Yes, absolutely.
It's a great question. I will only add to it that if you are guilty of obstruction of justice, it doesn't matter if the people you are obstructing justice regarding are dead. So, yes, if you lie to the police, it doesn't matter who dies around you. That is a crime. So, yeah, that's a good one, Cooper. Thank you. Okay, Road Trippin', it's a great handle. Road Trippin' on Twitter asks this. Do you know if the police have eyes on the swamp after nightfall?
So we know because we look at the flight aware tracker system that there are helicopters that have been up in the night that they use flare technology, we're told, where they are looking for, you know, anything heat sensing in the swamp. So, yes, I don't know about last night or the night before, but over the last month or so, we have seen that happen at the swamp.
Okay, well, thank you for that. Carrie on Twitter has this question. I would like to know if any of these possible sightings were believed to be credible in a certain area. I'm assuming all the places where, you know, the Appalachian Trail and the people who've said they've seen them in other countries. Wouldn't law enforcement need to warn those in the area for public safety? It's a good question.
That is a good question. First of all, none of the sightings have been confirmed. Last time I spoke with police, they emphasized that none of the sightings so far are confirmed Brian Laundry sightings. So they haven't really warned the public in any certain areas. Although interesting, and we touched on this the other night, Ashley, that now the FBI has been officially calling Brian Laundry a fugitive, which that's sort of new this week.
Sure. I mean, fugitive. He had a, warrant for bank fraud, this federal charge. So we were calling him a fugitive because if you're not around and you're on the run and there's a warrant, you're a fugitive. Okay. Joe on Twitter says, is the FBI going to make a public plea to increase awareness and encourage citizen assistance?
Another good question. I would love to know. The issue right now with the FBI is they totally do not answer any questions at all. Zero. They don't even give you tidbits. So we don't know. But you have to remember, I mean, this case is already getting so much coverage. Most people know what Brian Laundry looks like. So I'm not sure that a public plea at this point would really change much.
Okay, this one just came in from Shauna, and I'm just going to read it live as it came in. Where was Gabby when Brian flew to Florida from Utah? You know, he flew back to do the storage unit and then went back to meet her. Do we know?
It's our understanding that she was staying at a hotel in Salt Lake City. And according to Cassie, when Brian was back here doing the storage unit or whatever he was doing, he met up with Cassie and that they FaceTimed Gabby. And Cassie says that she did see Gabby and speak with Gabby on the FaceTime.
Okay, Brian, Michelle on Twitter, and it's M-A-S-H-E-L-L, Michelle, asks, does Brian Laundry not have any friends? I haven't seen one friend of his step up through this whole thing.
You know, that's an interesting question. That might be one of the number one questions I get. Why aren't you talking to more of his friends? Where are his friends? It's a good question. We obviously have tried. We have producers who have tried. There are not people coming forward, and we have not been able to find a lot of his friends.
Another one just came in from Little Lady. Is there any video of Brian Laundrie driving to the preserve on the day that he went hiking?
Not that we have. All that we're going on right now is what police say, which is that the Laundries in the house behind me told them that Brian went hiking at the reserve. But a lot of people are wondering, is there some kind of video that the FBI has that they're just not sharing with us?
Very smart, and they don't share all the time. It's not just this case. It's all the cases I've ever worked on. Katie on Twitter has a great question for you. I have often wondered it myself, Brian Enten. Do you actually have a place to sleep while you're set up at the neighbors during the week? And when do you find the time to sleep, Brian Enten?
So we do have a hotel. We sleep in the car a lot. We're at the neighbors most of the time. We have another, I'm with Luis all the time, my cameraman. We have another cameraman who fills in for us just to keep an eye on the house. And that's when we go to the hotel and sleep.
Okay, JM on Twitter asks this, Brian, and I'm just going to add to that. He doesn't get enough sleep. Trust me, he and Luis are working longer days than I would care to ever work myself. So JM on Twitter, if the Laundries are so miserable being bothered, why do they continue to stay in that home? Couldn't they go elsewhere?
That's another one of the top questions that I've heard. Why don't they go stay with family? Why don't they get an Airbnb? I don't know the answer to that question. The only thing I can think of is, you know how people are with their own house? It's sort of like their castle. Maybe they feel the most comfortable here. They want to hunker down, but we don't know for sure.
I'm going to pop this one in here from, I think it's Bingy B, just like the name. And they ask, do you know if the Laundrie's attorney can become liable if they find out he knew where Brian Laundrie was and lied about it, particularly if Brian Laundrie is charged with murder? I'll jump into it and I want you to add to it. Number one, yes. If you lie to the police, it doesn't matter if you're a doctor or a lawyer, it's lying and it's obstruction. And there's a charge, lying to authorities. So, yeah. And then there could be more to it as well, especially if he suborns perjury from someone who gets up on the stand and lies. He allows that to come out in any kind of trial if he's representing them. I think he's a real estate lawyer, though, right, Brian? So I don't think he'd be a criminal attorney for them in court.
Yeah, he is a real estate lawyer in New York, and I've heard several different lawyers explain it differently. You can't lie to the police, but are the police or the FBI really asking Mr. Bertolino, do you know where Brian is? Is that a question they would be asking the attorney? If they're not asking, I'm not sure he actually has to tell them.
You're darn right about that, my friend. And the truth is, it's always tick a lock, whether you're the lawyer or the clients that you're advising, don't talk, because you're going to say something dumb, and certainly don't text them. So, hey, Brian, thank you for that. And thank you for working late every night and answering everybody's questions. Appreciate it. We're going to let Brian go and get one of those naps that he needs because he's up and at it tomorrow morning. We'll be back here tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on News Nation. Thanks for being here.